Sometimes you think the grass is always greener on the other side. You want to be a New Yorker or you want to be from Chicago. But the success of our store is we are who we are. So this is what we know. We know Hawaiian food and we know the culture. And we brought that without any pretense. And it's a part of us now. And we share it with our employees in what we make. And we just love what we're doing.
Hello, and welcome to Food Crush, the On Milwaukee podcast for people who eat. I am your co-host, Matt Miller, culture editor for On Milwaukee, and I am joined, as always, by the queen of cuisine, the Khaleesi of cooking. That's all I got right now.
That's okay.
This is our third podcast in one day, so I'm all out of nicknames.
I'm all nicknamed out. That's okay.
But we may not have many nicknames this episode. By the way, it's Lori Frederick.
That is Lori. This is
food writer for Milwaukee. And while I may not have many nicknames this episode, we have lots of guests. We have not one, but two.
We have two guests today.
Yeah. A handful.
And they're among my favorite people in the city of Milwaukee. So we're here with David Lau and Guy Raisler from Onokine Grinds. And if you don't know what Onokine Grinds is, it is, you know, the place to go in Milwaukee for Hawaiian fare.
Arguably the Hawaiian restaurant.
And they have a little shop and a little restaurant, and they do a lot of carry out. And, well, I should really let them talk about it.
Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having us. It's fun.
So how did you end up in Milwaukee?
Well, I'm originally from Brookfield.
Okay, so less of a hike.
Less of a hike. I left here in the late 80s, went to Seattle, had a restaurant there for 10 years, sold the restaurant. I was goofing around, going to open another one. My mother was a nurse in Hawaii, got sick. I went for 3 days to see how she was doing, and her friend seduced me. And so I ended up staying for 12 years.
Oh, wow.
And then I met David, and then eventually both our mothers passed away, and it was very, very expensive in Hawaii. And I said, well, we could move to Milwaukee and buy a house for $100,000. And he said, no.
He just looked at you, his eyes popped out of his head. You're crazy.
So in 2008, right. That's what we did.
Yeah, because just to kind of contextualize it for people, I mean, because you guys had a little house.
Yeah.
Right?
We had a little fixer-upper.
And your house was about how big?
$740,000 for 1,000 square feet.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was on 1,000 square foot of land, and the house was built in the 30s. It was really a teardown. Yeah.
Wow. I just saw someone on Twitter the other day talking about how there was an article that came out. It was out of Washington, D.C., and they were talking about starter homes for $750,000 that were, you know, of a certain size. And I thought of you guys because I'm like, I think your house in Hawaii is smaller than that. But the guy was like, I can't believe my decision to move to Milwaukee was the best ever.
Paradise isn't all that paradisey when you've got a subprime jumbo mortgage. So we bought a house here with a check. Well, so that's makes Milwaukee much more attractive.
Yes.
So what, I mean, obviously, besides the obvious stuff of like the Hawaiian weather and obviously a very different climate from places like Brookfield or Seattle, what drew you to Hawaii? What kind of attracted you to the world there?
Well, I love Hawaii. And I still do, you know, I still love Hawaii. I love the people, the culture, the food. I love the ocean. I spent every day in the ocean, either surfing or snorkeling the whole time I lived there. The mountains are amazing. They're beautiful for hiking. And the people, the fusion of people and food. As a chef, I went from Seattle. I had a provincial French restaurant for 10 years. I got to Hawaii. I really didn't plan on moving there. I didn't know much about it. And the food there is this marvelous combination of the ancient Polynesian, which was a very limited diet, and then all the different peoples who were brought in to work in the plantation era culture, where they did the sugar cane and the pineapple. So you had Chinese influence, you've got Japanese influence, Filipino influence. They brought in people from Puerto Rico to run the sugarcane plantations. They brought in cowboys from Mexico. The Portuguese seem to be everywhere in the world. So you have all these different foods.
Yeah.
And now after 160 years, these people have all intermarried. And so now people are all the backgrounds. You might have a little Hawaiian, but you might have some Austrian and some Chinese. That's typically what people are.
Multi-ethnic.
People are called, in Hawaii, it's called hapa. You're a little of this, you're a little of that. There's very few people who are pure anything. And so the food is wonderful, too, because you'll go to a dinner party at Thanksgiving, and you'll have some Chinese food, some Polynesian, you'll have some American turkey and dressing, and then you'll have Portuguese malasadas for dessert. You know, so it is a food range.
And you might encounter something, I think, I feel like this happens, where you encounter something where you think, oh, that's Chinese.
Yeah.
And then you're eating it, and you're like, this isn't what I,
exactly,
because it's been influenced.
Exactly.
There's
Hawaiian Chinese, which is different than Chinese Chinese, which is very different than American Chinese. Yeah.
Right,
mutate, as they go through people. So
And David, you grew up on the mainland. I grew up
in Honolulu. Yeah. I lived there a total of 54 years. So, I always thought, wow, I want to be on the mainland. I want to be on the mainland.
I chose the coldest part of the mainland to come to.
It's a story of full circle. You just sometimes you think the grass is always greener on the other side. Yeah. You want to be a New Yorker or you want to be from Chicago. But the success of our store is we are who we are. So this is what we know. We know Hawaiian food and we know the culture. Mm-hmm. And we brought that without any pretense. And it's a part of us now. And we share it with our employees in what we make. And we just love what we're doing.
Did you know that that's what you wanted to do when you came back?
Not at all. No, it was, we sold the house in August of 2008. The recession started that fall. We moved here in August of 2008. David got a job at the Pfister. Nobody wanted to hire me. And then by 2009, there was... I thought, well, let's open a little store, because we had gone to Chicago to check out, do they have Hawaiian food? Because you can get Korean and Chinese and Filipino. There's stores everywhere in Chicago. There wasn't any. So we thought this would be an interesting little niche. And so that's what we did. We just thought we started the store first. The concept of a restaurant catering, that all happened later.
It was very much a store.
And that evolved over time.
Probably in part because people were really interested in, what do I do with
food? Right, exactly. We had to introduce people to the food. And also, it didn't make sense to pay to fly in Kalua pig when, we can make that here. The same with the poke. We started, I think, within about 6 months. We started making some poke, and it just took off, and just as a deli. I mean, we were just at that point, we had no tables or anything. We were just a deli. And then we started doing a few other things like the char siu chicken and some of the other, things that people love in Hawaii, and it grew.
Yeah, so talk about some of the basic things that you started out with.
Sure. Well, there's kalua pork, which is the smoky pulled pork. It's the traditional, which you picture the large pig being put down in the ground in the emu pit and covered with banana leaves, and it's slow cooked, basically a smoker steamer for about 14 hours. The ahi poke, we do the real classic version with the kakui nut and the limu monawea seaweed.
Yes, and I was going to say, when people say they want to experience poke, there's plenty of places now where you can get it, but most of it is kind of more of a modernized...
Right.
The keto version of it.
Whereas when poke originated in Hawaii, it was simple.
You went to the beach, you caught a fish. It might have been an ahi, it might have been an aku or an opakapaka. You cut it up, you threw in some sea salt, you threw in a little bit of crushed red pepper, you threw in kakui nut, which is like a cashew, the black shiny nuts they make lays out of. You took a little seaweed, limu monawea out of the ocean, and then you took some oil. They had macadamia nut oil, they had other oil, and you just tossed it up and you ate it with your poi, because poi was the only starch they had. That was how they ate poke. And now, of course, it's evolved into... amazing.
Oh, sure. Now,
it's exciting what's happened.
Sushi. Right. It's like deconstructed sushi in a bowl. But its origins are
very simple.
Pretty simple.
Sure. Yeah. That was just the way you ate it.
It was kind of an item you treated yourself on Friday when you didn't have to work anymore. It was Aloha Friday, no work till Monday. So you go get some poke from your neighborhood store or your favorite place, and you get a case of beer, and you start your weekend,
So not that far off from Wisconsin.
That's not right. Very simple.
What was it like introducing Hawaiian food to Wisconsin and to Milwaukee? Because you would think there wouldn't be that much. You would think that, I mean, obviously, you think Milwaukee, you think German food, you think the very heavy dishes, and... I think maybe some miseducated people don't even know that Hawaii does have its own very unique blend of cuisine.
It's it's not pineapple on pizza, which is comical. Right. If you say that to anybody in Hawaii, they look at you like that's the strangest thing I've ever heard of.
Which is the accurate response to
pineapple. Because we call a lot of anything with pineapple. Tropical fruit or pineapple on it, we tend to call it Hawaiian.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But actually,
with the Canadian bacon on pizza.
We had fortunately, we had right in the beginning a lot of people who found us who were from Hawaii, different ethnic backgrounds, some of them Filipino, some of them Hawaiian. And they started supporting us right away, which was great. And then people at Milwaukee are pretty adventurous. I think that I worked in a lot of different restaurants before I moved away. People here are pretty adventurous, and our food isn't that strange. Like smoky pulled pork, the kalua pig, if you put it on a nice Hawaiian sweetbread bun with barbecue sauce, you now have a slider, and that's very Wisconsin. So we've also made an effort to make it accessible for people to understand. We do a lot of weddings. I always recommend that you have buns and rice. In Hawaii, they do a lot of rice pretty much with everything. So if you make a little tweaks, people understand it. We did I wanted to do some kind of a salad. So we do a lihing carrot pineapple slaw, which is really my great aunt's carrot raisin salad, but with pineapple. And then there's a Chinese powder. It's an orange seasoning. It's kind of a sweet sour powder. It's made out of plum and licorice called lihing. And they dry fruit with it in Hawaii. And they love it in Hawaii. It's on everything. So I thought, well, let's put some lihing in there. And so we have a lihing carrot pineapple slaw. It's understandable.
Did that kind of buy you more freedom to adventure into some of the more unique and different people followed you into stranger, different, more adventurous parts of
they
Hawaiian
have. A lot of food in Hawaii is very comfort food. I mean, they have like chicken katsu, which is their version of chicken fried steak.
Okay.
A lot of food isn't really that odd. It might have a different name. It might have a little bit different sauce. Yeah. But people are willing to try it.
Like the tonkatsu?
Yes, exactly. Tonkatsu. Yeah. You got it. Okay, yeah.
One of our most popular items
right now. Which also should not be confused with the tonkatsu ramen.
Yes.
Yeah. Like one letter's difference and you have, you know, an entirely different dish.
The bulgogi beef. Like that's an item that's just we can't keep
in Hawaii
in stock right now.
We sell a ton of it. I was a little apprehensive to make because it's a shaved like a prime rib, and then it has a apple pear barbecue sauce with caramelized onion basically. And in Hawaii they have a lot of Korean fast food, you know,
there's kalbi places.
Here it's just starting to get popular. Mm-hmm. But I had a wedding for 200 people and 100 of them were Korean, so I had to learn how to make the bulgogi. So I practiced for about 6 months before the wedding, and then the Korean grandma said it was very good. So after that, I introduced it as a special. Yes, yes.
Fantastic.
So after that, we introduced it as a special, and then now it's on the menu. So we've also grown, you know, with things, and I'll try things, and if they don't go over, we don't do them again.
Yeah.
But most of the time, people are pretty fun.
Interestingly, though, people should keep their eye on Onokan Grinds, because you guys tend to be on the cusp of little trends that make it, you know, like you guys were serving poke probably a good 5 years before we really had another, it was cropping up, I think, on little as appetizers, you know, on finer dining menus in some forms. But you guys had that first, you know.
And we push things with special.
The Korean fast food thing.
Yes Korean fast
definitely,
food.
Definitely, you know, we're seeing that coming out.
Yeah. You remember Jay Junior's in Honolulu, you had a whole showcase of all these various vegetables, and you could either have the bean sprout, or you could have the roasted potatoes with the mayonnaise, or you could have the seaweed salad. You chose four of the vegetable items, and then you had your two scoops of rice, and you had your kalbi on top, your kalbi ribs.
Is this kind of like the southern meat and three? Mm-hmm. Meat and three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, except in Hawaii, right. It's meat, rice, and four.
Yeah.
Or some people will serve two, but we love the Korean ones because you had four, you know, and it was half a portion of each side. So. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you talk about that, how it's like the Southern barbecue meat and three, because there is a lot of American, what we would call American cuisine, injected into Hawaii, because obviously the obvious one is spam.
Yes.
And how spam became that world war, you know, the soldiers coming over there and bringing that
over. Spam is so popular everywhere but here.
Yeah, it's
we invented this.
It is starting to reach a mainstream level. I'm seeing ads for Spam on TV now, and
again,
they're selling. They know how to sell it now. I think
the Tulsa kids, you know,
it's keto
at Longfellow.
That's it.
They're in their elementary school, and they walk home, and they come in, and they order a Spam Musubi and or a Manapua, and these are the little snacks that I grew up with. You know that. Nowadays, Tulsa kids.
Well, that's got to make you smile.
It does. And, you know, they have their little candy parties. We have an alderman that has four children, and they come in with all their friends, and they bring in $5 or something like that. Yeah. And they have their candy party because we serve all the... We sell all the Japanese candies and
sodas. Oh, you do? Yeah, you have like a whole little wall of fun. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's called crack seed. In Hawaii, because it was dried plums, basically, with the leaking powder, and then it expanded into all kinds of different things. And so, generically, the whole candy wall is the crack seed wall. So that's kind of a funny name. Yeah, because it was a smash seed originally. But there's wonderful dried squid. You know, I mean, it's wonderful when people try different things. A lot of it isn't that strange, but a lot of it is...
Yeah, and
you must have some things that you can only find at your shop.
We do. We have like what they call lihing mui, which is the original. It's a plum that's been dried with the lihing powder. And then there's various variations of that, but there's also all kinds of dried, like we do a lot of the Japanese rice crackers, iso peanuts, strawberry sour belts. One of my favorite ones are these little gummies. They look like little gummy bears, but they're called hula cakes. So they're little. You eat little hula children. Yeah. So they're, you know, kind of variations of things that are on the mainland. And then there's a few things like the dry squid, the ika, which is not something that would
cuttlefish.
Be
normal.
Cuttlefish, which would not normally be, but it actually is a little bit sweet and it's kind of chewy.
So does it kind of have the flavor, the barbecued?
There's a hot version and kind of the not hot version is a little bit on the sweet side, and then the hot version is a little bit hot.
So maybe taking after
something
kind
different
of the sushi,
yes,
like
exactly
the barbecued like mm-hmm. unagi. Okay.
See, when I was growing up in a little valley in Punui, we had a little place called John's Store, and they were familiar in each neighborhood. There would be a little store like that that sold the ice cream, the milk, the Spam Musubis, a whole tray of them, so you could just pick them up and go, shave ice. And those are memories because as we were walking home from school, it was a village. We all got together and we had memories of having our first cigarette there. And when it rained, the proprietor would bring out a towel and dry us off. And they took care of us just like the parents would, you know. We talked about that, about busing children. We lost that sense of village.
Yeah, Hawaii is...
When we got further away from...
Exactly.
You know,
Hawaii is very local, very localized. Like the house that we bought was the house that his parents had bought in the early 60s. And so he and his family lived there for 50 years. So he knew everybody and everybody knew everybody in the neighborhood. Now our neighborhood was predominantly Chinese. And then the people who lived up on the bluff were predominantly Japanese. And so it was ethnically kind of interesting. And then the schools were kind of small and kind of ethnic that way.
But
also,
Mrs. Wong knew Mrs. Lee's kids and why they were not in school or everything.
Sure. Yeah. Why David was playing pool down when he should have been in school.
Yeah. That was a way of parenting other people's children, which kept everyone safe. You know, we all had kind of parameters. So that was part of food too. You know, we gave each other food because we're immigrants and we weren't making that much money. We gave food as a gift. We never went to anyone's home without bringing food. So whether it was six oranges or a cake from Lilia Bakery. And
avocado, lychee, anything you grew in your yard. Yeah, right. Everybody had different fruit trees, so you would exchange fruit.
Right?
Yeah. And I think what David's saying, one of the things I really love about Hawaii is that almost everybody there is an immigrant. I mean, there's very few true Hawaiians. I think there's maybe 5,000 in the whole world of actual Hawaiians, that pure Hawaiians still exist.
And David, where was your family? Your family was from China?
Yeah, and I was the only one born in U.S. I was born when Hawaii was still a territory. We had become a state in 1959, So your
family had come from...
Yeah.
In what part of China?
Canton. We have all the influences of the noodles, and the char siu chicken is a part of it.
Okay.
The rice and, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you talk about these Hawaii populations and the kind of Hawaii groups, and there's actually, you were saying there's a surprising amount in Milwaukee, actually, that it's, you want to maybe assume that based on the weather situation, but there's a surprising population here of Hawaiian.
It started, I think, in the 40s and 50s, some people, men predominantly at this point, came to go to Milwaukee School of Engineering, and most of them were of Japanese descent. From the Big Island, from the Hilo area, and they were probably the first in their family to get sent to engineering school. And then they ended up staying. They got jobs at Rockwell or whatever. They married a nice white house.
MSOE must have had a reputation enough.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All over. And so a lot of them then stayed and married nice, what we call white Haole girls, and then had families. And so now we're into the third generation. And those were the first people that came. And then there's just a lot of other people who've been military. Who've lived in Hawaii, who've come back. And then once people find out that, you can make a living and you don't have to spend $700,000 for a house, there's a lot of people who live. And education has been the big...
waves where people have left Hawaii because the job situation is not good.
It's very hard.
And have come to the U.S.
And we have good schools here. Which is a big draw for Milwaukee. Having Marquette every year, we have kids from Hawaii who are going to medical college. We have kids we meet who are going to Marquette, and oftentimes their parents will be here for orientation and getting them settled, and they'll come out to Onakind Grinds, and they're like, "Oh, thank God, our kids can find food." It's very funny, and we say, "We'll watch over them. We'll take care of them." And so we get these whole new generations, of kids.
Well,
every
that
time.
Has to feel good to you.
It is,
and feel good as well to share something,
Well, that's
kind of regularly.
It's about relationships, Hawaii has this magical. A fable about it. Anywhere in the world, you say you're from Hawaii, you're accepted, whether it's in Paris or Little Mexico, or it's a wonderful thing. And as soon as you say you're from Hawaii or you're from Kaneohe, we're instantly friends, just because we are cut from the same cloth and we are on the mainland, which is not our roots.
And Hawaii is very accepting. I'm obviously not Hawaiian. And I, but I was accepted by the people I worked with, all the old Chinese ladies in our neighborhood when I first moved in. Here's this, tall bleach blonde kid.
Right.
But I was out helping his mother in the garden. And so after they saw me doing that, then they would come by and they go, "Oh, nice." And they would, I was okay. I was okay then. Yeah. I was helping in the yard, so I must be okay.
My mother loved him. Yeah. Being a gay couple, they always said, "I'm not losing my stun. I gain a second one."
So,
they get another slave to change the light bulb.
Yeah. His mom would always come, and if she needed anything done, she'd come and get me.
And you're from the Midwest.
Yeah.
So, in some ways I hear, talking about Hawaii, and while we're not the smallest, village here. I think that hospitable sort of nature with people.
We are.
Friendliness.
Wisconsin is very nice and very helpful. People are very helpful. People are very community oriented here.
Do you agree, David?
I totally agree. Yeah. Wisconsin and Hawaii are so similar.
The weather, especially.
Yeah, the weather.
And agriculture. That's the first time that sentence has ever been said.
We're not pretentious. What you see is what you get.
Yeah.
When I catered at the Pfister, I would cater $1 million parties. And they would be driving Buicks. And I would say, "Guy, in the garage, there are two Buicks and one Kia." And, it's just, you can't really tell how much people
We don't have that West Coast imaging going on. Because, yeah, we have some very rich clients. And they do. They drive Buicks, which is kind of shocking. Because if you're now in Seattle, they would be driving Bentleys.
Well, or because LA. You have to keep up.
We're here. Yeah. It's kind of the opposite. There's that German Lutheran humbleness.
We have money because we don't spend
it. We have money. Yeah. We have lots of money, but we're not going to show it off. Exactly. Yeah. Which is very charming.
The status symbols.
And we're also we're agricultural. Hawaii, people don't really think about it, but everybody who came to Hawaii worked, most of these plantations were out in the outer islands. They were very isolated and they were hard. They worked 12 hours a day weeding, you know, sugar cane, and they were agricultural workers. You know, they were not, they had no manufacturing. So there's not a lot of skilled working there, but it was all agricultural. And Wisconsin's very agricultural. And they make all their little foods. They make poha jam and they make banana bread. And like we make cheese curds and we make, you know, cranberry sauce. And there's a lot of, as far as food goes,
there's a lot of parallels.
A lot of parallels.
Tell Lori and Matt about the Takuan situation we had.
There was a family, Japanese descent, who lived on Maui for about 100 years. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember their name offhand. But any Hawaiian grocery store you'd go into, they had all these brand of pickles. They had pickled daikon radish, pickled cucumbers, pickled, they made kimchi and all that kind of Asian pickling. And when we first opened, I said to David, I love Takuan. It's this yellow pickled daikon radish, and it's actually sweet. It looks kind of like a pickled
Sweet
and vinegary. Yeah, and it's like a pickled watermelon rind here. Okay. And I said, well, we should serve this as a garnish. And he said, oh, people in Wisconsin aren't going to like that. And I said, we love pickles. We have pickled pig's feet, pickled eggs, pickled watermelon.
You name it, we pickle it.
Yeah, and so I started serving it, and people really do love it. And now, unfortunately, this family, probably the third generation, they said, you know, we can sell this land for $10 million an acre. We're not going to keep making pickles like our grandparents did. Oh. So they don't make them anymore. So now I'm making Takuan. Yeah. I had to learn.
do you actually have the Takuan recipe?
Yes, I did. I went online and they had published the recipe for the Takuan. It's quite simple, actually. But it was funny. Yeah. And that's the thing I like about Hawaii is you go upcountry Maui and it's all like old hippies who make jellies.
While they're smoking their papalolo,
Right.
But the cottage industry is very alive in Hawaii with the food making.
So awesome. So let's talk a little bit more because your menu has expanded quite a bit.
We have. I take certain things that I liked in Hawaii. There's a Chinese, there's like Chinese delis, Japanese delis, Korean delis. Their concept really isn't here, but they have them in Hawaii. You just go in, you buy a pound of this, a pound of that, half a chicken and some sides. And there was a cold gin.
Have you been to the Lucky Bakery? The Chinese bakery?
Yes.
They kind of have a little deli there?
That's very similar.
Is that kind of what you're?
Okay. Exactly. And it's wonderful. And so I used to get cold ginger chicken on my way to work. I would scooter to work. And it's like a half a chicken that's been boiled, chilled, chopped. And
steamed.
Then they had this. Yeah, steamed. And they had this wonderful sauce called ginger sauce. And it's ginger and garlic and like celery and green onion and oil and the citrus. So I do that on my salmon. So I finally had to learn how to make that sauce. So I take some things and I rearrange them a little bit. Duck is very big in Hawaii because of the Chinese influence. So there's duck, and especially if you're going out for a nice dinner, you have duck. So lately I've been doing half of an oven roasted duck. And I'm doing it instead of an orange sauce or, you know, traditional, I'm taking passion fruit lilikoi, which is very popular in Hawaii, and I'm making a lilikoi rosemary beurre blanc sauce.
Ooh.
And so I'm taking different flavors and playing with them. And so the menu kind of evolves. We're pretty traditional in what we do as far as, you know, our basic menu. But then on specials, I'll do something kind of strange like this. And it goes over. I mean, because lilikoi, for anybody who's never had it, try passion fruit. It's an amazing flavor in anything.
I worry that I feel like maybe some people know passion fruit only from like bad candy.
Oh yeah,
it's like that heightened,
artificially perfumey.
Wait, luckily, you can go to El Rey and they have frozen passion fruit pulp.
Oh.
That's good for baking and making smoothies.
And you don't run into the issues of having the, because I feel like so much of the tropical fruit that gets here.
Oh, it's, no.
It's been picked, so it can't be picked
no.
when it's ripe because it would be rotten by the time it got here. So it gets picked a little too early. So, like, we've never tasted a mango.
No, we have mangoes in our yard, and you do. You get spoiled. Although in Hawaii, you cannot get a peach, so there's a trade-off.
Okay, I was going to say, and I'm sure you could point out, yes, exactly.
Or a good tomato.
I got David a Georgia peach when he first moved here, and he just about died. He'd never had a real peach before, because the same thing. Sure. It's picked green.
Greenhouse.
And then it's shipped in a box.
But buying the Pope frozen is probably a far better alternative.
Oh, it's a great product. It is. It's a great product.
Because you're getting it where it's ripe.
Mm-hmm. And you can control the sweetness and the viscosity of it, so it's good.
Yeah.
Like tomorrow, we're doing catering for the brewers. This is the seventh one that we're doing. And the nutritionists had approached us, and they wanted healthier foods for their team. 10 years ago, they said they were having chocolate chip cookies and brats, and that was lunch. But now they pay their players so well.
$27 million a year. You want them to be as healthy as possible.
Right. right.
So they're doing like a kohlrabi slaw with Brussels sprouts and carrot and a papaya seed dressing from Hawaii that Guy makes from scratch, too.
So a little Wisconsin, little Hawaii fused in that. And then we do a oven roasted vegetable. A lot of different colorful flavored vegetables, bell peppers, and nice little anise and red cabbage. And then we do a Chinese hoisin sauce.
But he does it al dente. And there's a way to pack it so when they eat it in an hour and a half later, it'll be just right, you know. So it's all about cooking
it's
under.
Magic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then they're having our char siu chicken, which is the Chinese barbecue chicken, and then the kalua pork. And then a white jasmine rice. So
we're happy to say we've had 6 wins and 1 loss. So tomorrow
we'll get another win.
But, you know, keep feeding them.
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
we will.
Right. So you're in Milwaukee, and you must eat, you know, a different. Do you guys have favorite things that
we do. I like to go out for? David, with his Chinese background, loves Chinese food, obviously. And so we do have 2 restaurants that do a very nice job. One is Fortune, which is Cantonese, and we eat there probably once a week. And they have 2 menus. They have an American menu and a Cantonese menu.
And a Cantonese.
Go to the Cantonese menu. Be brave. They have things like steamed fish with tofu in a black bean sauce, which is amazing.
Sounds great.
Salt and pepper shrimp, salt and pepper fish. Everything they do is wonderful. And then we also love Sichuan.
Yeah.
Oh, I love Sichuan.
Yeah, I know you do.
Yeah. Us too. We had it for lunch yesterday.
And I'm always willing to try another dish because it always surprises me.
And I feel like every dish that you try on the menu is delicious.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Like you can't. You know, I was trying for the longest time to find something that I wouldn't love, you know, because it got to a point where I was like, wow, you know.
Yeah, we really love that. We hit the little places. We live on the south side. Mm-hmm. We love El Señorial for Mexican. It's just very authentic, very fun. The service is always great.
Very friendly.
We like Emelinda.
Yeah.
We like the Gouda girls.
Mekong.
Yeah.
Anybody who's never been to Mekong for their buffet lunch is missing out. That's the best $9 investment in the world. And then on weekends, I think it's maybe 13.
Because 12 or 13.
Yeah. We hit there a lot.
Right.
And then we want something real different. We go Casablanca. And we don't really, because we always, our circle. Yeah, yeah, we don't really go out to eat a lot outside of that, just because we get done at 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. And if I want a steak, I'd rather make my own. So I'll go over to Kettle Range and buy a really expensive steak and cook it myself.
Well,
and it's still half the price.
So expensive.
No,
it is, you know, it's probably,
exactly.
You know, it's only a part of what you'd spend in a restaurant.
Oh, yeah, compared to.
Because taking care of the labor.
When my parents would come to town, they insisted we take them out to 5 o'clock steakhouse, which is fabulous. But that's a $200 dinner.
Yeah.
You know, and they loved it more than I did. So we just do our own, you know, cooking at home. And I have a sous chef and I have a dishwasher at the store. So they help me out. I don't cook at home very often. We just do stuff at the store. And
yeah, I've been kind of watching the trends nowadays. And I read a lot on the millennials and their habits, and they love to have their food delivered. And I've been noticing an uptick.
We are a lazy breed.
With DoorDash.
They just like it at home. Yeah.
I like to eat at home.
Sure.
We spend 80 hours a week in a restaurant. So for us to go to a restaurant isn't really that exciting.
Right.
And sometimes if I'm out for dinner, I sit and think, oh, they need water on table three. Yeah. God, nobody has bussed them over there. That looks terrible.
Yeah, it's stressful. And
that lady is not enjoying her salmon. I can tell.
Let me help.
I'm like, I'm in that industry mode. It's hard sometimes to get out of that. Yeah. So it's better to eat at home.
It's cozy. You can just sit in your pajamas and eat the food, especially if you're ordering like comfort food type stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
And it's at that price point, you can, you know.
So have you guys started to do the delivery?
Yeah, the DoorDash. Yeah. We do DoorDash. Getting more every day. But places like Grubhub, I don't believe in giving them 30% because we don't even mark up 30%. So I'm
sure. Well,
some of them are really expensive.
You're really selling your food for an affordable price.
Well, we try to. Right. You know, we're a deli. We're not fine dining. We don't have valet parking. We don't put a cloth napkin in your lap. You know, so we're selling food. And that's the way we want to keep
it. But also an experience because I've never walked into your shop and felt welcome.
We want you to feel aloha. I had for 10 years, I had a provincial French little restaurant in Seattle, just up from right from the Pike Market, actually. Mm-hmm. It was on 315 East Pine Street.
And right by the market.
Oh, yeah, just up the hill. It was a little storefront and it had been there since 1965. Mm-hmm. And the original, it was always like a chef and somebody else it was two or three of us who ran it. And that was where I learned about hospitality. I took it over from a chef and his wife, and he greeted every person. You know, the kitchen was open, so he, adio, and he'd greet everybody. He was this wonderful retired opera singer chef. And when I took over, we started doing the same thing, and I knew all my customers by name. When they would make a reservation, I would make specials for them because I knew what they liked. And that kind of intimacy and friendliness and warmth is what I love about restaurants. And that's what we like to do, too. I love people, and I love food. I hate management. I hate paperwork. Those are unfortunate things that I have to do, but the part of it I like is the people and the food. And so that's what we try to emphasize.
To kind of have all of that.
Yeah.
All in one little place.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, he's the good guy. I'm kind of the one that's needy and need attention. So if you come in and say hello to me and David, I get excited and it's affirmation.
For people who don't know, what does the name Onokan Grinds mean?
It is, in Hawaiian, it means delicatessen. Basically, there is a blog that name. So the literal translation Ono is the ancient Hawaiian language. Mm-hmm. Olelo is the name of the language, and Ono means good or delicious. So something is Ono, so it would be good or delicious. Kind grinds comes from what the people of Hawaii actually speak, which is a slang language called Pidgin, and Pidgin was what all the immigrants made up. Language. It's like
Spanglish.
Yes, or Yiddish is to German. Same exact thing. The people came over, so it has the cadence of Cantonese. So it's very.
It's musical.
And then it has English words and Cantonese words and Hawaiian words and then some Filipino words.
Because they weren't fluent yet.
Right. So they all made up the language. So kind grinds means that food. Can mean anything.
That delicious food.
Yeah. Like delicatessen is in German, delicato in Essen is to eat. So it's used like the same way. Mm-hmm. And it's very confusing because you'd pronounce it onokine grinds if it was Hawaiian. But it's just kind grinds.
Yeah.
Kind is a great word in Hawaiian. They use it as a whatever, wherever, whoever kind of a thing, an intensifier. So something can be dekine. Somebody can be dekine. We went over to Auntie's house. She was so dekine. I mean, you have to know in context what they're talking about.
I called it onokine for a long time, and someone corrected me. And
well, it
like,
would be. I mean,
like,
that would be in Hawaii.
It would be.
Oh, yeah, okay. Exactly.
Full disclosure, I've been calling it that since approximately an hour ago.
No. That's okay. Because in Hawaiian, it would be.
It would
that,
be.
That
yeah,
would be
yeah,
the okay. translation.
So I've been right the whole time.
Yeah. You have.
It's confusing.
Oh, it's just funny because I think I was corrected by a regular, and they're like, no, that's not.
A lot of people just call it the Hawaiian store.
Yeah.
Yes, that is true. That is true.
That's got to feel good to know that you kind of have that branding basically in Milwaukee, that like you are, when people are talking about Hawaiian food in Milwaukee, you are the place they're thinking of.
It is nice. And we bring in, whenever we go home and visit like David's family and stuff, we bring stuff back. Like we have the shirts and the jewelry and we have the groceries. And so we always
have beautiful, beautiful paintings.
Yeah, we always try to make people realize that, you know, this is all part of Hawaii also. You know, when we first opened, I was going to have a little advertising called Ono Kind Grinds to One Stop Aloha Shop.
And we would have people that lived here quite a while, maybe come down from Horicon or Appleton, and they would jump for joy. They would say, oh my God, we have this and that item. Mm-hmm. And it just makes us feel so good that they have that experience, or that wonderful couple who went to Hawaii for their 50th anniversary.
And, or 50 years, they got married there.
Sure.
Often.
Yeah.
Oh, and they can find things for each other, or yes, they can have a little bit of the experience.
Things people grew up with, you know, strange candies that we'll have that, you mm-hmm. know, are pretty much unique to Hawaii. We carry that stuff. And then we had this a lady, she's probably in her 70s by now, with the Hippity Hop lady. When she first came in, she'd been living here for probably 30, 40 years, raised a family. She started seeing all these things that she had was used to as a kid, and she was jumping up and down.
Yeah, that's right. The hippity hop.
The hippity hop lady. Yeah.
That's cute. That's cute. And be honest, like, so selfishly, you started the store so you could bring in things that you really wanted
exactly.
from home, right?
Exactly. And it also gives us an excuse to go back. You know, we have to go back to...
How often do you get back?
Well, we haven't been... It's been 2 years, but sometime this year we'll get back.
We're due.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And you go and you visit family?
Yes, we do. Okay. Guy's dad hasn't been doing so well in Tampa, so we've been focusing on Florida recently.
But which isn't terrible either. But
Florida, yeah. Could be worse.
But yeah, we go back. We go to swap meet. They have this huge thing in Honolulu all around the stadium a couple days a week. And you can buy everything. And that's where we get a lot of our stuff. And then we go and we find new products. We try new things when we're there. You know, we see what's happening. And then we usually try to spend a couple of days off out of civilization and go to the big island or something, and then commune back with Hawaii as it really is, without the concrete and the condos and the shopping centers.
Right, right.
Are you guys fans of the Loco Moco?
Oh, yes. Okay. We make a Ono Loco Moco. We make a huge... It's a giant.
Yeah, describe this, because I'm starting to see it on other menus. Yeah. And how do you guys do yours?
Well, it was started by surfers in Hilo, so that they could, you know, it's kind of a big thing. And
there's kind of like a hash.
There's a little takeout place in Hilo called Cafe 100. They're the birthplace of the Loco Moco.
Okay.
And basically it's rice and a burger and then gravy and then an egg. And so we
right?
It's very comfort
food. Sounds like hangover food.
Yes, it is.
So lots of calories.
Lots of calories. You wouldn't get the munchies when you're out on your surfboard. You know, it's not easy to smoke when you're out on your surfboard.
Right.
So they would food. And so we do it with our sticky rice. We make a really big, nice burger with teriyaki in it. And then we make a Portuguese sausage gravy, brown gravy. Ooh. So we step it a little bit. You know, we're in Wisconsin. We don't have the beautiful mountains and the gorgeous Plumeria air. So we've had to like step our food a little bit to make people enjoy it. And then I do an organic free range egg.
Yeah. Mm. And recently, Andrew Koester from Rumpus Room said that's his favorite thing to eat. So
you know. He did.
Yes. Yeah. Andrew's been wonderful. I'm so happy for him. He went to Hawaii to study cooking with Alan Wong.
I know more and more chefs now that I've been talking to.
Yeah.
He spent a period of time there.
I was amazed when we met him, because Alan Wong is the premier chef in Hawaii. And I mean, and good for him. He left here, went there, worked his way up to sous chef, came back, and now, of course, he runs the Bartolotta's Rumpus Room, which he's a really nice guy. He's so cool. We did his mom's wedding.
Yeah.
Oh,
which was
fun.
Quite an honor, when, you know, a little nerve-wracking when Andrew's there, but she didn't want him to have to work, so we catered the wedding.
But you know, chefs, I mean, you're from this industry. You know, chefs are generally kind.
They are.
I have a very important final question for this podcast. How's the surfing in Milwaukee and Wisconsin compare?
Well, I'll be honest. If I have to put on a full suit and it's November and I'm up in Sheboygan, I have never tried. No, I love to surf. Not the crazy 50-foot insane surf kind of stuff. It's amazing to watch. But I'm more the old, you know, old school. You kind
4 to 5 feet.
You go sit out there and you visit with your friends, and then you take turns taking waves in, and then you paddle back out. And
more, a little more relaxing.
It is not the insanity kind of stuff. But I've never tried it. I've seen people, you know, do it. I've watched video of it. Up in Sheboygan is the kind of the mecca.
Well, it seems like they have the right ties.
I don't know. I'm not that big a fan of cold. and even with a wetsuit on, I don't know. That would be kind of cold. I give them a lot of credit. Every year.
Like, very, very brave Wisconsin.
They are. They are. That's, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, I'll wait till I go back to Hawaii in the 94 degree
that's
water.
That's the way to do yeah. it.
Yeah. Are you in agreement on this?
Yes, very much so. Yes.
Yeah, the sharks don't bother me nearly as much as the cold.
But when the sun's out and it's 10 degrees, it's pretty nice.
Yeah.
I always say that the cold days are much easier to bear here.
They are.
When you have the sunshine.
Yeah. The 40 and raining, that was Seattle. And I love Seattle. Most of my family live there. I don't mean to speak ill of it, but that drizzle, that cold drizzle. Well, it does get depressing.
Well, we get too much rain here in comparison. Like, Seattle had the advantage of it just rains a little.
It mists.
A little all the time.
But for a long time. Yeah. That's what would happen.
Versus here, where we're like the soaker hose of rain.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened to me in Hawaii is I was there and my grandmother called and said, your mother's in the hospital. So I just hopped a flight with a backpack. And her friends, it was 84 degrees, it was sunny. Her friends took me to the North Shore of Oahu. They took me snorkeling and surfing. Nobody had shoes. Their bikes didn't have locks. And I called my sister and I said, you know, mom's really sick. I'm going to stay. Because the contrast of Seattle to Honolulu, I was like, no, I'm not going back.
Fair. I don't think anyone would blame you. Well, so, thank you guys so much for inviting us.
Our pleasure. Thank you. This was fun. It was nice meeting you.
Everybody listening, if you haven't made it out to
come in and visit us anytime. Guys, you don't have to come in for a big dinner. Just come in and check us out.
Go buy some Japanese candy.
You can look at all sorts of treasures. We have menus, okgrinds.com. If anybody wants to look at the menu and stuff to get an idea of what we do.
And you might get a chance to meet David or Guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we're always there.
That's a treat, too. So. Yeah.
Say hi.
Yeah.
And that takes us, as always, to the sparkling water second of this episode, which is going to be a sparkling water non-second. Because I wasn't thirsty and didn't drink sparkling water this episode.
Well, he drank sparkling water, but he drank the key lime again.
I did. It was an accident.
Still good? Second time?
Yeah. I mean, it's drinkable. I mean, I would not choose any sparkling water so far. There's nothing that I'm like taking and I'm like, well, I'm returning back to you. But key lime does taste like key lime. I give it that. It actually tastes like what it says on the can.
Yeah.
So congratulations. I had a really great key lime pie over this weekend.
Oh, yeah? Where was it
from? I went to Buckley's for a birthday dinner with my family.
Buckley's has an amazing key lime pie.
They have a great key lime pie. It is not too sour, because sometimes you get a key lime pie and it's just really bitter and tart. It was a very tasty, gentle lime flavor. And she, Pam Buckley, makes the desserts, and she makes a really great, like a blueberry sauce that goes on it that helps mellow it out even more. Yep. I am about that dish, and I am very hungry, in case you're not catching on to that right now.
So
why not read delicious food writing, which will only make me more hungry? This week's Food Porn Minute comes from Chef Nick Oltarsh, and his piece is called Ode to Egg from creativeloafing.com.
Yeah.
Is that like a bakery site or like
I don't recall what the point of the site was, but.
Or like, is it a site dedicated to laziness? Apparently they're from Atlanta, Georgia. Atlanta, explain your website to us.
So I bet if we looked at, you know, maybe it was bread.
It might have been bread. Probably bread. That tracks.
Might make sense. Anyway.
This is going to be a piece about egg, and I will be reading this week's food porn. The latest trend has been to throw a fried egg on every conceivable dish indiscriminately. But let us not forget that the egg is a versatile and crafty little guy, a taste chameleon of white and yellow, albumin and fat, meringue and mayo, whose omnipresence in our foodie lives is wonderfully indispensable. Imagine a world without eggs.
No.
A toad in the hole is just as good as you remember from when you were a kid, if not better. All brown, buttery, and gooey.
Gooey.
With runny yolk and crusty fried bread. Subtract the sizzling egg, and it would just be an eyeless piece of desiccated Milba toast. Your eggless childhood would be bitter and frivoled, leading to antisocial behavior, reefer madness, and ultimately a life of wanton depravity. Don't see anything wrong with that. Ham and cheese croque monsieurs are perfectly good, but the revved up croque madame with the addition of a butter-basted fried egg is exceptional. The creamy bechamel is that much richer, and textured with a sunny-side egg ravenously pierced by an eager knife and fork. Picture drop soup instead of egg drop soup, or fuyung rather than egg fuyung. So much for Chinese takeout. The moral of the story is there is no moral. We have eggs. We love eggs. Lori deleted all of my paragraph.
Oops.
Where was I? We have eggs. We love eggs. And we are going to keep eating a lot of them. If I could, I would sip warm egg yolk through a twisty straw, perhaps with some flaky Maldon sea salt or fleur de sel. Yes, I surely would. Lori, deleting my graphs.
I don't think I was in the mood on that sentence.
I was in, well, it's still scrolled.
It moved up. I'm so sorry.
She can't speak. She can't type. We love you, Lori.
I like how you say the word bechamel.
Bechamel.
It was nice.
Bechamel.
Zoe de Bechamel. I love Zoe.
And her sister Emily de Bechamel. Wow.
That's my, that popped in my head, and obviously, you know.
Have you been sitting on that? Have you been sitting on this pun that whole time?
The Zoe de Bechamel?
It's a really pun? A shame that she hasn't opened a French restaurant, Zoe de Bechamel.
It is. I keep thinking breakfast spot. It's your calling, you know. You're cute.
Forget.
You sing little ditties, but you know.
Could you imagine her just sitting in the corner of a little cafe, just playing a ukulele,
strumming
and plucking.
While I eat my beautiful Eggs Benedict.
Cookie Loco Moco. Yeah. I like it. Lori, where can people find you on Twitter?
People can find me. I'm Lil Frederick everywhere where I am, which is Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
And where can people find Food Crush?
And Food Crush. Food Crush MKE.
You can find that just about anywhere on the internet. It's just Google Food Crush.
Yeah.
We could give you all the websites, but honestly, just Google Food Crush. And you can find me at A Man About Film on Twitter, and I'm also on them Instagrams. Lori, it was a pleasure as always.
It was always a pleasure, Matt. Thank you so much for co-hosting with me.
Aww. How many of it? We got to be coming up on 50-some episodes or so.
I'll have to check that out.
We'll have to look this up.
For sure.
We're getting to the point where I'm going to have to get confetti poppers.
Well, you know, we have a collection now.
We do. We could release a DVD set.
And so if you've missed some of, if this is your first podcast listen.
Yeah, we don't normally prolong the goodbyes as much as this. Lo Frederick, I am Matt Miller. This has been Food Crush.
Let's go take a nap.
She's tired. I'm hungry. This is Food Crush. As always, keep cooking. Bechamel.